Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever.
This week, we'll be answering questions about a circus love, bipolar excuses, gender dynamics in non-monogamy, a charismatic flake, and a book about making marriage work based on research.
Yeah. I thought the first question that we have lined up, it made me immediately think of you, and I had to ask, because I know you've had some circus love, and I'd love to hear, first off, your experience with love in the circus realm, and then, and if you've had the case where you fell in love with, you know, similar to the person who wrote in, fell in love with someone who is questionably available.
Yes and yes. For those listeners who aren't aware, I have 13 years of experience and presence in the circus community as a performer and also a booking agent with my own company. So I know this strange little niche of a world fairly well. And fun fact, there's actually a term unique to it. So a lot of people who perform with props, such as fire dancing, you know, spinning staves or poi or hoops or whatever, are often known as spinners or fire spinners. And so there's a term for when people tend to date a lot within that community, and they call it spincest. Because it's so real. I mean, for the uninitiated, the circus community is a beautiful, diverse, wonderful group of people who all happen to be incredibly hot. And it's hard not to be a part of that community and become attracted to others around you, right? Because people are bold and daring and confident, and they're spinning fire around. And like, how is that not hot, right? Yeah. So I have dated people in the community, and like, it's resulted in wonderful relationships where I grew and was able to perform with them and have adventures and be understood and seen for being, you know, this is such a unique little world that it's nice to have someone who gets it with you. But yeah, it is really common. It is very common in the circus world. But I also know like other competitive performance sports where you have a partner who you work with constantly. You spend a lot of personal time with in private, like in a studio. Your bodies are constantly touching each other. It's very intimate, you know? And so you learn a lot about them. You overcome obstacles together. You refine your communication together. You develop inside jokes. It's so much of a relationship just without like sex and romance. And so it really easily tends towards that with people. So it's really hard not to fall for people sometimes. I mean, I've also performed with people who I decidedly was not a match with and did not fall for, no matter how much we rehearsed together. I'm just like, nope. But like, if the potential is there, it can easily grow. So so I get how that happens.
And as you're around a bunch of people who are hardworking.
Yeah.
I think hardworking people who put themselves out there and, yeah, willing to take risks. That's all these qualities are in a circus performance or anyone who's really delving into something they're passionate about. It's all sexy.
I'm sure you've experienced the same thing in like the music world, playing with people, getting to know them more, you know.
It's a male dominance, you know, genre, if you will. True. We're seeing a lot more women like step into the fold, which is awesome. But I do know a couple women who are in, and I think I had the same thing where I've watched them perform and I'm like, oh my gosh, hard eyes.
Ooh, yeah. So
and I think for one band, I remember seeing them and loving them so much. And I was like, I would quit my band to join them. It's like, ooh. I know you don't have a second guitarist, but would be so happy to learn your material or whatever. And it's because I love their music, not because I wanted to get like closer to the person, but it happens that, you know, the singer slash guitarist is also like a really sweet and like humble person. Yeah. And also makes it badass music. So it's like, hell yeah, I'd love to like be a part of that. But
alas, right on.
They didn't hire a second guitarist.
Oh. Yeah, well, it's such a unique world. I'm excited to dive into this question. As soon as I saw someone writing from the circus community, I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, fellow circus.
Let's get into this.
Would you call them fellow circus?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It depends on your own branch, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So here's the question. This question was submitted by Miss Mia Wallace. Love your podcast and really appreciate the insight you two offer. Thanks, Mia.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The skinny. I have romantic feelings for my circus partner. Ultimately, my question is whether I should reveal my feelings to him or not. Much of the time, I believe it would be best to keep my thoughts to myself, but then there are other times when I feel like I must tell my truth. The complicated aspect is that my partner is in a long-term relationship. They live together and have been together since college. We are in our 40s, and I absolutely respect that and her, but also question if their relationship is traditional and monogamous or not. I am concerned if I share my feelings, it will complicate or at worst end our friendship and working relationships, which are extremely important to me. But then I have this nagging, seeming need to express my truth and clear the weirdness I think is obvious, but might not be at all. I question whether he has feelings for me too and just cannot seem to figure out what to do or what to say, ask, etc. This has been going on for at least a year now. I will get brave and think I have the words, and then in the moment, it doesn't feel organic. Most recently, I wrote him an email and then just sent to myself. I did feel better and was really glad I didn't actually send it to him after the fact. I have talked to a few select mutual friends and my therapist about this at length without coming to a solution for my mental ease. Do you have any suggestions on how I might go about asking him if he has feelings for me beyond friendship and work in a way that is respectful of his relationship with his live-in girlfriend, or whether offering my truth is just an unfair unloading of my emotions, which really aren't his responsibility? I'm so completely conflicted with what to do. The emotional turmoil I am putting myself through spending energy on this is exhausting. I keep making up things, filling in the unknowns with what-ifs. I also keep contemplating whether certain things he says or does mean something, reading into pretty much everything, filling in the blanks with a story, constructing it to what I want to be or see, perhaps. I think it would help me to know definitively if there is mutual attraction, certainly seems there is, along with the interest or desire to explore romantic interaction, the bigger question. But I also am afraid of risking what we definitely have with our circus partnership. What I have to gain could actually be like the total fairy tale of everything I want in a partner, but that might then be at the destruction of his current relationship. What I have to lose is friendship, some amount of career success and certainty, and certainly a bit of physical touch and fulfillment from what we create together. What I also have to lose is the huge suck of time and emotional energy I keep spending on the fantasy or of what could be and the sadness of what it isn't, meaning I feel like I would actually gain back a good bit of my mental capacity and energy to just know. The potential for gaining clarity is what I keep coming back to. I have done much work on my mental health over my life and I'm certainly healing from many relationship traumas. Questioning whether I am stuck in the old same patterns is something I often do. I have learned a lot from reflecting on this situation, but also feel like I need a big reality check-in. If it is reasonable to ask that of him, I think it would be helpful. Thank you in advance for any and all insight.
Oh, man. Have we been there before?
Oh, Mia. Yeah. We definitely have. That's very relatable, and yeah. I'm sorry you're experiencing this. It sounds mentally torturous.
Yes. I have quite a few experiences with this where do I or don't I tell the person? And, yeah, I'm sorry that it's also been really eating away at you. I'm of the opinion, especially my experience, that these are things worth sharing, that anytime I've not spoken my truth, I've always ended up regretting or just been like looking back and like, oh, but I now have no idea what this could have been.
Mm.
And I don't like living my life in regrets. I like to just be like, let's put the things out there. But I think there's ways you can approach it without it crossing any boundaries. And I, you know, you mentioned that you worried about putting like this responsibility on the other person or like unloading on them. And I don't think that's the case. I don't think by you sharing, you're not actually, you can make that clear that you're not expecting something from someone. I had a friend who I did this with, well, I have quite a few friends, but I've done this with a friend of mine who was engaged is monogamous. And every time we were together, just the way she interacted with me, it felt like we were really crushing each other hard. But I also knew that we're on the opposite ends of the dating, spectrum, if you will. And she's engaged. So there's, and I wasn't going to sit here and try to break that up or anything. But I did feel like I wanted to at least communicate that. And I met with her at a casual hangout and was like, hey, I just want to share something with you. And I'm sharing because I want just to be transparent and honest. And I'm not sharing because I'm having an expectation. And I don't want anything changed because I value our friendship. And I'm afraid of that losing that. And so I just want to tell you so that you know where I'm at and that nothing really has to change other than just knowing that I have just, I guess a deeper level of admiration and fondness for you. And I share that, yeah, I've had this looming crush for this person for such a long time, for them and just appreciate them. And that while there may not be opportunity for us to date, it's I appreciate having them in my life and that I just want them to know, to be transparent. And her response was like, really? Really? And she was just so smitten and it was really her reaction. And she felt so touched. And it was, she actually ran into a door after I told her, would you leave me? Because she was a little excited. And it was the sweetest thing. And we're still good friends. And so while that may not be everyone's experience, I think not making a big deal out of it, just kind of just being honest and also just making sure you're clear with your, I'm not telling you because I need you to do something. I don't need you to break up with your partner. I don't need us to start dating next week. I'm telling you because if I don't, then I feel like I'm not being honest with you or myself. But I'm sharing this so I can just kind of move on. And this is something that, it's there and I just don't want it to sit inside of me anymore.
That's such a great way to put it, Fernando. That's very tactful.
Thank you. And it seems like every time I've done that, because it's happened more than once, I seem to fall in love with my friends. It happens.
Yeah,
I think
it does.
It's people I'm close to. Then I realize, oh my God, they're so much peaceful. I kind of want to think that. Yeah. And so sometimes that has ended up in romance down the road. Sometimes it hasn't. And, at the end, I can't think of a time where I've had this kind of conversation and it just went belly up. Because I think it's because I'm also front loading with here are my fears. I don't want to fuck this up. I respect you and just have this appreciation for you. And I want to be real with you. And every time it's gotten received well, sometimes I'm not interested in dating or whatever the case is. I'm that's fine. I'm not asking, anything. I'm just telling you. Now you have another crush on, someone else's crush on you. And so that's it.
Oh, wow. May we all find admiration so strong that we run into a door because of it. That's beautiful. And what a gift, I guess, to receive from someone who lets you know they really appreciate and admire you and you don't have to reciprocate. You don't have to do anything about it that takes you off the hook and you can just absorb and let your ego feed on that admiration from somebody. Yum. That's nice.
Yeah.
My initial reaction to this question was actually the opposite of your advice, Fernando.
Ooh.
So we're going to fuck over Mia real good here because we're going to tell her opposite things to do.
Yeah, I'm going to hear this.
Well, okay, I think if you choose to take Fernando's advice, I love the way he put it. And I do have advice for adding on to that on how to tactfully present this. I guess the way my brain looked at this was, what's your desired outcome? And what are the most likely outcomes here. So let's say you tell him and you don't know any background or context about what his life or relationship structure is like. If you're like, hey, I have these feelings for you, da da da. And if he doesn't feel the same way, there's going to be that awkward moment of thanks. I don't really feel the same way about you. And then what are you going to do with that, Mia? It's okay. Are you willing to sit in that awkwardness? Are you willing to continue rehearsing with him and it being a little awkward? Or perhaps he might be I'm uncomfortable just knowing that's how you feel. I don't think we should continue rehearsing together. That could happen. It could be. It's mitigatable. But then what if you tell him you have feelings and he reciprocates and is yes, I have feelings for you too. but I'm not willing to change my monogamous relationship at all. And therefore, we must not act on this. That may be satisfying for you to hear, like, oh, awesome, my feelings are reciprocated. But then maybe that feeling of like, but what if, like, now we can never consummate something we know we want to do? Will that add tension to your life? Will it tempt you guys to cheat or break his, you know, relationship agreements? I don't know the answer to that. Just ask yourself what you feel like could happen. Alternatively, if you don't share your feelings, you may never know, like the what if may certainly haunt you, but that does fade with time. I think we can all attest to that. Eventually leaves your mind. And you know, you can masturbate about it a lot and like enjoy the what if. Perpetual advice for unrequited love. And like acknowledge to yourself that it's a fantasy. And like once you've got your rocks off, you can kind of like come down to earth in reality and be like, okay, like maybe it's better in my head in some ways. Do you really know everything about this guy in terms of having conflict? Like, have you guys ever had a real fight? Do you have the drudgery of just day-to-day relationship stuff, like fighting over the dishes together? Or, you know, those little annoyances are omitted from the fantasy of crushing on someone. And therefore we start to see somebody through rose-colored glasses, right? And we interpret them as being grander and more amazing and perfect than they actually are. So sometimes consummating that, it might be a letdown if in your mind you've built this up to be something extremely magical and wonderful. And yeah, it might not be. I mean, you've known each other for a few years, it sounds like, and you have a connection. And it is easy to misinterpret people's signs, like seeing what we want to see, wishful thinking. So I'm glad you're aware about that. I love seeing your self-awareness in your letter.
Agreed.
Bravo.
Yes. Clapping for you.
Love it. And it sounds, you know, like I'm interested for you to ask yourself, am I prepared to receive a no, or I'm not interested? Can I like live with that? Will I truly feel at peace if I get this off my chest? So if you decide to tell him, I would advise doing some probing and research first to get the context of what his relationship structure is, if you really want something to actually come of this and not just to get it off your chest. So kind of bringing up like, oh, I've been listening to this really cool podcast lately, and they talk a lot about non-monogamy, and I think it's so cool that people are starting to put that out into the open more. Have you ever had friends who did that? Like, I don't know how you want to segue that as organically as you can, Mia, but like that way you can assess his feelings. If he just is like, oh, yeah, no, that's super weird and for wackos, like I would never do something like that, then like you know that this cannot be enacted or consummated, right?
I like that, the feeling of the feelers out. And just, you know, and I also really like that some people think about something first. You like to masturbate on it first and then come back. And you can come down.
Yeah, because sometimes what's so hot is just the yearning, and that's what's like revving your engine. And then once you like let off that steam, you're like, oh, I don't think my rational brain really needs that or wants that quite as much. But is that when, just me?
Yes.
Please write us and confirm that it's not just me.
I think those are valid points. And when you are dating someone that you're close to and have other connections with, there is, to some degree, an inherent risk. Now, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't take those risks, because that's, as a circus performer, you know, being in the outside and watching these, like, you are essentially taking a risk every time you put yourself out there. And so I guess this one comes down to like, what's the risk you're willing to assess?
Yes.
And maybe it's a combination of being able to have, if you feel really close enough to this person to have like vulnerable conversations, then that could be a way to, you know, work into this. You know, if you were to like, if you were to go with the suggestion I was giving earlier, maybe you could make the request that, hey, I want to share something with you, and maybe share your fears. Like, I'm feeling really vulnerable about this, this thing that's on my mind. And I just want to be transparent, but I also, I'm afraid of hear these outcomes. And so I just want to know that we can talk about it as adults, and that this isn't a unspoken need or some kind of like subtle, you know,
expectation.
Yeah, expectation is like, I'm just telling you this because this has been on my mind a lot, and I don't want to be sitting on this thing forever, but I also would like to just get some clarity on it. And I would love to have a discussion so we can just, you know, talk it out. And so And if, you know, if they're like on board, like, yeah, of course, you know, anything you want to talk about, that can help steer the conversation to know that, okay, cool, that you're getting some validation that hopefully they're not going to just like bail out. And yeah. Like, nope, this is way too close. I can't imagine the scenario of that, but then you would have an opportunity to know, okay, this person's willing to work with me on it. And it could be discussion like, look, hey, I really, like Mike said, I also have these feelings for you too. And that has crossed my mind, but I'm in a monogamous, you know, relationship and we're going to get married or whatever. I don't know what their arrangement is. Or maybe they are open.
And then Yahtzee.
Yeah, Yahtzee.
Right? I think if you have the conversation with him and it's either unreciprocated or it is reciprocated but unavailable, you can diffuse the awkwardness and continue to have your working relationship with just a few tactful phrases and preparation for them. So one way to diffuse awkwardness is just to acknowledge it. Be like, hey, I know I like brought a lot out there for you. I don't mean to be so intense. Thank you for receiving it. I really don't want this to change things between us. I am here for this. Like, we've been creating beautiful work together. Mm-hmm. I value you so much as my circus partner and our friendship. So like, please, hopefully we can move forward and we can pretend this never happened. It's cool. Like, I'm here for you as your friend.
That
I don't know. Like, I don't know how else to diffuse that awkwardness.
Yeah. I think everything you said was great. But the pretending like it never happened.
You just cringed so hard.
I did, because I'm like, because it doesn't, I don't know that it works that way.
We can't
unreverse it. We can't reverse the thing we said, but we can say like, look, we can go forward and that even if this doesn't work. Even though, you know, regardless of where this goes, like I still want to continue working with my circus partner. Mm-hmm. And if this can't, if this is the connection we have, then I will receive and accept it as it is and just mm-hmm. appreciate that we have. And that might open a deeper level of connection with you too.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's some pondering here to like make sure that, are you okay or to accept possible rejection?
Mm-hmm.
Are you, we'll call it disappointment, like in the opportunity where it's matched but not possible in right. a given scenario?
Mm-hmm.
Or even in the most extreme case where this person no longer wants to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So just like, if you can consider those scenarios and if you can find a way to like, you know, navigate that, each one of those, and you're like, I think this is important for me to speak it and I'm willing to take that risk. And also I want to make sure that I speak to it. And you know, you're not going to be perfect on this. This is not easy right. conversation to have. So you can just be gentle and try not to make it like a big deal. Mm-hmm. You can just share it, but don't like be like, oh, hey, you know, sipping coffee. Like, hey, so I'm madly in love with you. And I just want to kind right. of, I'm not sure what to do with that. So
no
anyway,
segue.
Yeah,
oh my
no
God.
Segue, just like right in. So you want to have some tact. And I think even just the front loading it, so far in my experience has been really helpful. And even just sharing, like Beck said, just being vulnerable, sharing your fears and concerns, like, and expressing what you value in the person of your friendship, your circus connection, and that, and just knowing that this is ultimately what you want to preserve. But and depending how that conversation goes, that can either open the door for possible opportunity, that can may offer deeper connection, or it may just be like, okay, well, now I know this isn't possible, and you know, while I may mourn that fantasy, I can move on with my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I can like mentally and just like emotionally move on and say, okay, like I can appreciate this person for who they are.
Yeah.
And I don't need them to be anything different or anything more. I can just like, hey, like this may not work, but I'm just glad to have you in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of gratitude and that perspective shift, if that's the, you know, the path this goes down, can help you move on and kind of, you know, adjust your sights elsewhere.
Yeah. That's a perfect way to put it. I love that. I think this sounds like it is worth taking the risk, but you know, maybe doing a little research ahead of time, like I was suggesting. I have been in this position, but did not tell the person I had feelings for. I had very intense feelings for a coworker who I was married and I was 99% sure was monogamous. And I chose not to ever, you know, reveal this as much as I thought I hid it well. Who knows? And it was because I knew it would probably not be reciprocated. Even if it was reciprocated, it wouldn't be consummated and it would make our work life really awkward after that. And I didn't want to stir up or wreck his life in any way. And I was just like, I'll keep this to myself. And it's kind of like if you just don't feed those feelings, you can let them die off on their own. And it's hard and it takes forever. But that was just the route I happened to choose because my risk assessment in that situation was just like not in my favor. But it sounds like this one could be for you. So, all right, you convinced me, Fernando.
Your advice is much better. I was like, whenever you said that last reply, I was like, I'm just like, yes.
She's coming around. Yeah.
So one thing I want to add to that, even though the risk wasn't worth it, do you have any alternative feelings around that? Like, do you either regret that decision in any way, or do you feel like, you know, part of me wishes I knew more information to so I could, you know, resolve
it? Yeah.
Or did you masturbate on it and then it... I'm going to try this now.
It's a great way to experience alternative realities in your head, you know. Yeah, I guess I regret it a little bit. But I think what I wanted out of that conversation, if I were to have revealed my feelings, it would have been more for me than it was for him. Like, what benefit is it for him other than for his ego to know that someone had feelings for him, you know? Or, like, maybe he had feelings for me, too. Like, I certainly read into signals and, like, made up the story in my head that it was. And therefore, it would be nice to have heard that it was reciprocated. But again, I was very, very sure it could not be enacted. Just was not wise. Workplace romance, bad idea. Anyways, yeah.
A sticky situation.
Oh.
Yeah. There are some people who seem to make it work sometimes. And sometimes it ends terribly.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know. It's a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Either way. And hopefully that you're... circus partner is a you know, respectful and emotionally intelligent person enough to be willing to have the conversation and hear what you're saying and not be like, oh, she's asking me to break up with my partner and,
right.
like, and run off with her. And like, no, like I can hear it as, oh, I can receive that as like a sweet compliment and flattery and respond to it accordingly.
Yeah.
And so, and then that can be maybe something like if you're already working in circus, I'd imagine that you're problem solving to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so this could be another way. It's like, okay, well, how do we navigate this going forward?
Wow.
You know, like, and since you're already friends with, I believe you mentioned that you're friends with his wife as well. And so, you know, assuming they're open, maybe that's a, if they are an open marriage or whatever their agreement, maybe that's a conversation the three of you can have as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, and that's if you go down that path. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm optimistic. I think it's, and you know my opinion on this, and so, and it sounds like Meg's siding on me. So.
You got me.
but just know, just tread lightly, and yeah, I think just some pondering on it, but not much pondering. You don't want to be sitting here for another year wondering this. I think set a deadline for yourself.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Set a time, meet with them in a place that you two aren't going to be distracted. Best not when you're like performing or rehearsing stuff,
right?
And then just let see where it goes.
Yeah. Good luck, Mia. We're rooting for you for this to work out.
Yeah. And if you do have follow-up, we'd actually love to hear.
We love follow-up. Yeah.
As a friendly reminder, in case anyone is not listening to the end of the podcast, you know, it's like everyone skips the credits and they forget there's a really awesome, you know, cliffhanger scene afterwards.
And more of Fernando's music.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Then there is... you can submit your questions at headoverfeelspod.com, and we will gladly read them there.
Yeah, there's a contact form. You can make it anonymous. Tell us all the details. It's right there.
So yes.
That's how to reach us.
Good luck, Mia. We're rooting for you. Let the, what is it, the swing cest?
The spin cest.
Spin cest begin.
Oh, gosh.
So our next question comes from Aaron. Aaron writes, help, I feel so stuck. I've been dating someone, his name's Clark, in quotes, for a year and some change, and we ended up moving out to a new city and state together. Congratulations. That shit's hard.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship up to this point has been great, and we moved in with some of his friends to get us on our feet. Clark deals with bipolar disorder and sometimes gets either very insecure or mean, or shuts down completely. One of my best friends lives in a neighboring city from where we are at, and when we spend time together, I'm usually not on my phone and just enjoying my time with her. On multiple occasions, I have not answered his calls, wasn't near my phone, and he got really mean with me, accused me of cheating, and eventually apologizing, saying it's his bipolar and it's, in quotes, the way he is. For a while, I've been supportive of this and tried to show up lovingly and compassionately, but this has been a struggle. I recently have expressed wanting to open up the relationship, and he flipped out and wouldn't talk to me for several days. When he came back around, he did the whole apology thing and blaming bipolar. I decided to wait to open up the relationship until he felt ready, but it feels like that may never happen. I don't have a car and, in a sense, depend on Clark a bit for financial support and feel a bit trapped. I feel like I'm not able to fully be myself, as every time I try to express myself, he shuts down, gets angry or very depressed, and goes back to blaming his bipolar disorder. We just left the current place and moved into a new one, and I told him that this is sort of the last chance to see if we can make this work. He seems to want to be in the relationship, but it's hard to tell how this is going to go. How do you deal with this sort of cyclical behavior? Is this normal?
Oh, Aaron, I feel so bad for you. This sounds really sad. You say you feel like you can't be yourself. It sounds like your wants and needs and preferences are totally secondary to his. And he's not being accountable for his feelings or actions here. You deserve better. And I want to gently call out that the way that you speak about this is fairly disempowered. I think you may have slipped into a bit of a doormat situation where he's driving this relationship and you're just the passenger. Mm. Like, his emotions are what affects where what you guys do or the state of the relationship. Or, yeah, it's like you're always in a reactive position to his actions and you're not getting heard. You've brought this stuff up, and it sounds like you're trying to be so conscientious and so compassionate and like aware of his situation, his mental health issues. And bravo for that effort. That is beautiful. We need more kind and conscientious people in this world.
Yes.
But taking it too far allows yourself to get stepped on a bit and taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're in a pretty hairy situation with moving to a new place and city. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you at least have a friend who's not far from you. So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine that maybe you're still kind of getting your roots down. So this is just a lot to be dealing all at once.
Yeah.
I personally have the statement when anyone tells me that, in big fucking air quotes, this is just the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really hard time when that statement gets thrown out, because it's just such a cop out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's resigning to being a certain way. And when you say, that's just the way I am, you don't have to do any work to improve the situation. You don't have to get tools to mitigate it. You're just like, deal with it.
Exactly.
That's like, you might as well say, deal with it, because I'm not doing anything.
He's like, fuck what you want. This is how I'm going to be.
Yeah.
You just have to deal with that.
And, you know, like, I appreciate that you are also being very supportive of, you know, what he's dealing with. And, yeah, bipolar is hard to address. And
absolutely,
especially being a supportive person. But when in any situation, whether you have any conditions or any that you're dealing with or not, to use any of it as sort of like a handicap, or to use it as like a crutch that basically trumps everything else you do, I think that's unfair.
Right.
And it's, you're not dating a person. You're kind of dating a wall, because now you don't get any real response back. You're just getting like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is all I get.
I want to call out his stonewalling. Like, that's what it's called when he gave you multiple days in a row of no contact without, you know, talking to you about it or trying to negotiate something. Like, it's okay to take space, but the way he just cut you off like that is not okay. Stonewalling is a form of emotional abuse, and it's one of the four horsemen of the relationship apocalypse, as the Gottman Institute calls it. So that's a really big deal that that's there. And if he does that a lot, it's very unhealthy and toxic. And mental issues, speaking of as a person with mental health issues myself, they're a strong contributing factor to issues in your relationship, absolutely, and they're not to be discounted, but they're not an excuse for bad behavior and disrespect.
Yeah.
He cannot hide behind that to excuse away what he's doing. He needs to exercise his own autonomy and his own maturity. He's an adult, to go get himself psychological help in some way.
Yeah, I agree. And there are lots of support groups for bipolar disorder and depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Google search away. And
therapy.
Yeah, therapy.
Read books.
Yeah. And there's even online communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, well, it sounds like it's a bit late you know, it sounds like you've moved into a new place and you're giving the last chance. So this is more like retroactive advice, I guess is it called. And that if you're on the last kind of straw with someone and this is, you're giving them the last chance, I am not of the opinion that that is a good like moving into a new place is not a good tactic to address said issue. Mm-hmm. Because you're only, it's like you're putting, well, I don't have a good analogy that was about to come to me. So, but ultimately you're trying, so you're both moving to a new place. There's already the stress of moving. And then you're telling him, okay, this is your last chance. So now probably the other person's going to feel like they're walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. And there may be some, and I don't know if this is the case or not, but maybe looking at the other person under a microscope. So like, so you're looking at them like, okay, when are they going to fuck up? And they're like, don't fuck up, don't fuck up. Oh, I fucked up. Mm. And so it definitely adds a bit more pressure to sit in the situation. And generally speaking, that is what happens. It usually blows over not so well. So I think you can be clear, you know, and just be direct about what you want in the relationship or in any relationship, and then let it be like a, and this may be more of a clear conversation of, are we going to work? Is this, are we compatible or not? Are you willing to do work and I'll do what I can? Or is this, you know, should we pass? So an example you could say is like, I want to have a relationship where I feel supported in being my fullest self and to be able to talk through difficult situations so I can work through them with them and a partner. I also have need a partner who's willing to take accountability for their behavior, especially when they are projecting their own insecurities or whatever else in the space. I need a partner who's not willing to resign to complacency, and when things are hard, to communicate and not shut down and go away. And then asking them what he want in a partner, and then see where the conversation goes to see if he's willing to do those things. Because I know for me, I have a lot more patience and capacity for compassion when someone is willing to meet me with accountability. Mm-hmm. And it's like, look, if you're like taking action and you're willing to work through whatever it is that needs to be rectified and like rebuild the trust, that shows me you give a shit. That shows me that you're willing to step out of, to like make a change, an active change. And for that, I'm willing to have a lot of patience because it's like, wow, you're giving me like live example. Like you could say it all day up and down, but once you see the action, mm-hmm. that, and even if they mess up, it's like, you can see that they are actively trying. That gives me like, wow, they really do care. That speaks louder than any, I'll do it. Yeah, mm-hmm. sure. But if the person doesn't, or if I'm just seeing repeated actions and no, a repeat of the same undesired actions and just everything just kind of feels like we're just back in the same spot. That's where my patience runs really thin. Working on that myself and trying, but I find that it's harder for me to be compassionate and to be patient when that's what I'm experiencing, because then it shows me, well, either you're not willing to, or, you know, that's what at least the experience I get, like, mm-hmm. you're not willing to do this or you don't care. If there's something else going on, I'm not seeing it in the action, because to me, it looks like you're just, this is a repeat. And at that point, then I choose that it's no longer working for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aaron, you have the right to your particular standards in a relationship. All the statements that Fernando was just making, like, I want a partner who blank, or I want a relationship that blank, that those are examples of asserting your boundaries. You're not telling this guy how to be or what to do. Mm-hmm. You're making your requests and standards clear. And if he chooses or is unable to meet them, then, oh, well, like, you're at an impasse. You cannot force him to be more compatible or convince him to be nicer to you. Like, he's shown very clear and repeated disinterest in meeting your needs, in being kind and civil and respectful to you. And therefore, I think you should just break up. I don't think there's anything here for you in this relationship. I think there are people who will treat you better. And again, it's not because of his mental health. It's, you know, people with bipolar the world over are capable of having wonderful, healthy relationships. This guy has some other issues going on, probably to some degree unrelated to the mm-hmm. mental health issues. And you can choose not to be a part of a relationship where your partner isn't working on their shit, trying to do mm-hmm. better and hearing you and like taking into account what you want.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, start extricating yourself. I know you're financially dependent on him, and that's really tough, and it'll take mm-hmm. time. But save away money, pick up extra jobs, start being more out of the house, invest more in your hobbies and your friends to support you so you have a network. And, yeah, start stepping back emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to add to that, you know, you have your friend that's nearby, and so you may – I would imagine she probably knows everything that's going on. Yeah. So maybe just communicate to her and tell her, like, look, I'm looking to break up with, you know, partner, or mm-hmm. this is where it's going down. Can I stay your place and make a plan with them? If you're going to stay with anyone for any extended period of time, just like make a plan and be in communication. Don't just say, hey, I need a place to stay for a little bit. And then you're there for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Give them a plan like, hey, I need to get up on my feet, but I need some help and I need a place to stay for at least a month or two. And then can we revisit the conversation every month just to see where I'm at? Mm-hmm. It would really mean a lot to me. And because I don't have anywhere else to go. And if you want to stay in the city that you're in, if you want to like move back home, then maybe reach out to friends at home or family to see if they're willing to support you. Because, it's hard whenever you don't have like the resources to go, like either live on your own or just like cut a lease off. Mm-hmm. But I like that you agree. You said that. I'm just like, there it is.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, that you said that he's been mean to you repeatedly by your own words. Like, why would anyone want to be in a relationship with someone who's mean to them? That shows disrespect, resentment, a lack of, consideration. Those are just the worst qualities in a partner. And there are tons of people out there who will be right for you and treat you really well. And I imagine with a lot of time with this guy and the gaslighting he's been doing to you mm-hmm. has probably eroded away your self-esteem. So I hope in the process of you seeking and building a new life for yourself and kind of stepping back and seeing this relationship for what it is, I hope your self-esteem builds up as well.
Yeah. We wish you the best, Aaron.
Good luck, Aaron.
If you love our wisdom and insights from the podcast, imagine how valuable it would be to get private one-on-one coaching with us. We'd love to give you a personalized perspective and support around any kind of relationship struggle that you're experiencing. To get more info and apply, go to headoverheelspod.com/coaching.
All right, question number 3 is from Cassandra, age 38. Hi, Head Over Feels. My hubby of 6 years and I recently opened our marriage about 8 months ago. We did a lot of preparation, reading books, talking about boundaries and expectations, and it feels like the right time to do this. Our relationship has always been pretty mellow and loving. We're like besties who tease each other a lot and just like to have fun. Ride or die. So neither of us were too scared about opening up, and in the past few months, it's gone pretty smoothly. We talk about everything very openly. Within a couple of months, I'd had several dates and eventually found a guy I headed off with who I now see once a week in a more casual relationship. However, as for my husband, no dice. He's had some conversations on dating apps, but they haven't led to dates in person. Women seemed polite but skeptical or flaky, and he's become pretty down in the dumps about it. I've tried to keep his spirits up and even looked over his profile to see if there was anything that needed tweaking. I want to support him and see him get excited about having success in dating, but I don't know what to do. Feels left out a bit, but more than that, he feels a bit undesirable, too old, unable to participate in the non-monogamous lifestyle he's excited to explore. He's such a wonderful guy. I'd be thrilled for him to find someone, but I feel a little guilty about my success at the moment. What can we do in this sort of situation?
Yeah. Cassandra, first off, thank you for writing in. Secondly, it's so sweet to hear how supportive and loving partners. And I love how supportive you are of your partner as well. And just like wanting him to be able to explore like polyamory and an open relationship. And like, that really warms my heart. It's mm-hmm. like really comforting to hear. Mm-hmm. So as male identifying myself, dating poly is hard sometimes.
And yes, it
is. For other men that I've known who are poly, it seems to be a shared experience. And I think it will take time, but I would encourage him not to like throw in the towel yet. There's a lot. I think he's just going to have to look at this from the long game in a sense. So dating websites are hit or miss when it comes to meeting poly people. Even I found that like with Tinder, every time I when I explicitly mentioned poly, I got zero swipes.
Ooh.
Or it's like, or okay, maybe that's extreme. I would not get anyone who like reply back if we like, you know, the swipe thing. I haven't done Tinder in so long.
Yeah, people swipe without even reading anything, and then they're like, "Oh wait, you're non-monogamous," and you're like, "God damn it,
yeah.
Read my damn thing."
Yeah,
save
yeah.
us both some time.
Yeah, that needs to be a picture, like holding a sign, "I'm poly,"
right in the photos.
Yeah, but it sounds like, you know, for your husband, I don't know what, you know, how he, I don't know how he's approaching it, but maybe there's he could like spread himself a bit. And what I mean by that is like looking at meetup or poly like meetup groups. There are, if you go to meetup.com, there are lots of like local poly groups, probably one in your city.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can join one or multiple of them, and then you can explore getting to know people. So when you're just getting to poly, it feels like you don't know anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as you are delving into more, then you start kind of building your community and circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing that comes to mind is, yeah, getting out to meet other people, whether it's like mixers or just even just casual things, and let it be just a, you know, a gradual connection, like rather than just like a hard day, like, oh, we're going on a date. Just let it be organic. Another thing that comes to mind is, you know, you have, since you're dating someone who's poly right now, have a get together at your house, invite your new partner, his other partners, any of their other poly friends, and just like, let it be kind of just this mishmash of all the poly people that you're connected with.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not going to be a direct match. He may not meet someone there that is going to be someone he dates. He might, but it could sprout new connections and friendships. And then now he's connected these bigger circles of groups.
Exactly.
And then eventually it could be a friend of a friend, you know, now that people have got to know him. And I think of that tends to, and then that way he's not just trying a very, you know, from a very like narrow like dating apps, because
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, I think OkCupid seems to be pretty decent when it comes to poly, because
yeah.
now they're more open about that. It's sad to see the amount of poly shaming that happens on there, but yeah, that could be another place to go as well. But I wouldn't expect him to get responses right away, because my inbox was like dry for
right. Yeah, that I wanted to say, Cassandra, that is such a common experience. The gender dynamics in the non-monogamy community are imbalanced in terms of what types and the amount of potential matches you could have. So men are facing some disadvantage here, in the sense that there are some assumptions about men that women who are single and maybe they're not non-monogamous, but they're interested in trying it out or something like that, there's an assumption that men just want to hook up. They're not interested in an emotional connection or a relationship. And therefore, if you date a guy who's poly or non-monogamous in some form, he's not going to stick around. He's not going to invest. He's not going to be totally present with you. You'll never be a priority to him. And therefore, a lot of women who statistically, or at least stereotypically, I don't have data for this, are often looking for relationships. Those who are will be turned off by that image of the guy who is, you know, available but not that available to them or to what they want. So therefore, they're going to be even more skeptical than the single people in the monogamous world, which is already like a, oh, this is likely to be a hookup and not go anywhere sort of stats, right? And there's just some mistrust that I think is unfair, because a lot of the guys who are non-monogamous are emotionally available and are present and willing to invest and do that work and be with you. But there's just that assumption that they're not. And then on the other side of that coin, if we're looking at this gendered binary, women who are non-monogamous are seen by men who are maybe monogamous, but they're curious, like, oh, this chick is poly, that's interesting. There's an assumption that she's just slutting around and that she's not available or looking for much more than hookups. And there are a lot more men in the world who are willing to just take advantage of that and be like, great, let's hook up. You're a hot poly chick. And like, I'm not going to take this seriously. So that's a disadvantage women then experience, but they happen to get more matches that way because there's just more willing men to entertain the possibility with no long-term outcome, whereas the opposite isn't true. So the cards are kind of stacked against your husband, and I love the way that you're supporting him. You like looked at his profile, and I agree with Fernando. I think the best tip here is just being patient and, you know, honing your communication and your flirtation skills and putting yourself in the right pond where the poly fish are swimming. Because yes. They're already like a narrow slice of the larger pie of available people out there to date. So yes, you've narrowed your prospects by, okay, I can only date people who are okay with me being in an open marriage here. So finding those people where they're at, the things that they like to do, meeting more in real life rather than that kind of cold, distant swiping interaction you have through an app, hopefully that'll help. And yeah, introduce them to all the people you can who are open to potentially exploring that more. Mm-hmm. Grow the community.
Yes. Another thing too that your husband can do is looking at his interest. Mm-hmm. You know, I notice that whenever I'm dating or when I was in periods of like trying to actively date, can't meet anyone worth a shit, you know? And I mean, not anyone worth a shit, but I can't meet anyone, period. Right. Just wanted to delineate that. And so it feels like when I'm actively searching, nothing comes up. But then when I'm focused on myself and just doing my thing, that's when I meet the most amazing people. Mm-hmm. And I love those, how those connections just kind of grow.
Yeah.
And so I don't know where he's at, if he's like actively trying to like putting all his energy and just feeling really disappointed. But sometimes it's like, it's not like baking a cake where you know that you'll get the cake at the end. Because at this point, you don't know how long you need to cook it for.
Right.
You don't know how long the ingredients need to sit. And you may have to wait for a certain ingredient to ship before you get to the cake. So it's very different in that you're going to have to do work, and the work pays off at different times.
Right.
And so I think for him to focus more on himself and like, what, you know, what are his hobbies and interests, and what are the kinds of people he wants to meet? And and then when he can narrow that down, where do you or him, or where do you think that you can meet those people that he's interested in? And then maybe those are the groups he needs to start hanging out, whether it's, I don't know if he's into, I don't know, golfing. Then I'm not a golf fan, but hey, more fire to if you do. Then maybe he needs to find communities who do that, or other people. Or if he's more into like fringe things, it seems like poly people, making generalization here, but it seems like poly people are really into more fringe things, like people who are really into, like, I don't know, festivals tends to be a place where there's lots of poly people.
Sure.
Or like
art scenes, performance art.
Yeah, performance art is a huge one too. So just like looking into that and just like creating new connections. So like focusing on just deeper connections rather than going right for the dates.
Yeah.
And then that way, as you know, time goes on, then he'll meet some people that are really cool. Then they could, it could grow into something more and deeper. And I think, and it also probably take his mind off it, because if he's focused on only dating and then he's disappointed with the results, there's not really much to work with. You know, it's like you're just kind of like, oh, it feels like I'm doing nothing. But if you're focusing on like a passion or something you love, and you meet someone as a byproduct, you're still focused on that thing and that this thing that brings you joy. And as a byproduct of you doing a thing that you love, you met someone awesome. I think that is a great way to go about connecting people.
Love it. Well, we wish you both the best. Please report back with the happy success he will eventually have, inevitably.
All right. And our last question comes from Leah today. I've been dating someone who I've known for years. For the sake of anonymity. I don't know why I thought the other way around. Anyway, anonymity. Let's call her Gloria. For about 3 years. Known her for 6 years or so. We've been close friends for a while, and she knew me when I was married and monogamous. And after I opened up my marriage, we ended up starting to date. She is such a charming woman and is incredibly outgoing, well-liked, and brilliant in so many ways. While things have been mostly great, there has been an emerging pattern coming up and recent events that's making me question everything. To preface, I have Lyme's disease and experience chronic fatigue, among many other things that hinder what I can do and how long I can interact, or what kind of interactions I can handle. I identify as a spoonie, have to plan my life accordingly to make sure I don't blow myself out for several days. Gloria is very spontaneous and had and goes out a lot dancing and meeting people with ease. I, on the other hand, am slow to meet people, and while I love dancing and a lot of the shared activities, it usually takes me several days to recover from one night of late night fun. So I need to plan out my time. When I make plans with Gloria, she bails a lot and it's hard to plan anything with her. But when Gloria calls and asks if I'm available in 40 minutes, I can accommodate so I can see her, as that seems to be the way it works to get together. When she's invited me out dancing, she mentions there are a few new friends as well that will be there, and sometimes has even ditched me to hang out with those friends. A lot of those times, the friends she mentioned includes someone that she has she's romantically interested in and usually hooks up with them. While I want to respect her autonomy, I feel hurt when I'm ditched and the lack of transparency on her part. I feel like I accommodate her a lot and she barely wants to give me any leeway. A week ago, she met someone that she is over the moon about and is doing all the things with this new person that I have been asking and wanting to do with Gloria. When I ask Gloria about this, she says that she doesn't want to be responsible for me, especially given my chronic conditions. In parentheses, I've never asked Gloria to be responsible for me, as I've dealt with this so long and have been able to manage it quite well on my own. And she said that she's used me for sex comfort and support while we've been together and feels bad about it. I was crushed and feel so alone right now. Gloria then reached out and said she wanted to talk, meet in person, and wanted to take accountability. Now, before that contact, I was ready to end it all. I feel lured in when I talk to Gloria. She's charming, and in a sense, when I'm around her, I feel like I end up giving her what she wants. And when I'm away, I feel more clear about what is going on. The thing that hurts the most is that after all this time, this feels like one of the very few times Gloria has stepped up to take accountability. Usually it is me holding space for them, and now I feel like it is a bit late for her to start pulling her weight around when I've been doing it for so long. What should I do? Should I talk to her and sort it out, or has this relationship run its course?
Oh my God, Leah.
My heart goes out to you.
That sounds terrible. That's a lot of disrespect. And for 3 years that you guys have been dating, this is how it's been going, and she's still like bails out on you and doesn't try to make accommodations for your needs and then blames you for them and like spins it around at you like this. Like, I am extremely skeptical about this very recent one-time turnaround where she's like, oh, I want to take accountability, and she's acting more compassionate. Maybe she fears losing you, because it sounds like you said, you were ready to just end it with her. So I think that is like a last-ditch effort on her part to kind of keep you back under her thumb. I don't assume good things about this person. Yeah. I don't see what's in it for you to stay here. You're kind of like a low priority to her, it sounds like. You need clarity on your relationship structure and your boundaries, for sure. I noticed that when you said you go out clubbing and she goes home with someone else, like, is that... like, she's clearly non-monogamous, and you're cool with it to a point, you're going along with it, but you're experiencing a lot of discomfort around the lack of clear expectations or structure here. Are you guys official? What does that mean? What do you both want? If you want to stay with her, those are some really big things you got to get down to the base of. But you don't have to expose yourself to her flirting with other people or going home with other people in order to respect her autonomy. That experience is opt-in. That's not like, oh, because you're non-monogamous, you just have to watch me flirt with other people and deal with it. That's not part of the package at all. No. You don't have to put up with that.
Yeah. And just to get all this information last minute, like, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
It feels like there's information being withheld. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think the bit that really just hurt just reading is that they said they didn't want to be responsible for you because of your chronic conditions, which is super unfair for you, because she's not giving you any autonomy. She's basically saying that you're making her responsible for something you actually never made her responsible for. Mm-hmm. So she's not even in reality. She's now in her projection and saying she doesn't want to help you. It's like, well, that's shitty on their half. Like, that's fine if they want to help and they made an agreement to that. But the fact that they're making this assumption and then putting onto you is not fair. They're like not. It's like they're not even listening.
Yeah.
And then the piece about using you for sex and comfort and support, it sounds... Eesh. Yeah, it sounds... if I were in that position, I wouldn't want to meet this person. I'd be like, this is done.
It sounds like the narcissist took off her mask for a moment and like revealed herself there.
Yeah. You know, if this has been happening for that long, it's like, why is this time any different?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's been a lot of you holding space and you're the one who's kind of doing the work, and then they come back and do this, it's the same repeated behavior. And I'm assuming that there's probably been a lot of conversations, and this is not a new pattern by any means. Then, yeah, like Meg said, this sounds like a last ditch effort, and it sounds like it's time for you to cut your losses and move forward, because this person, if they really cared, I think they should have done this a long time ago. You've been giving them a mile and they're barely giving you an inch.
Yes.
And that's not fair in a relationship. The fact that you've been accommodating probably emotionally to make your plans when you make them, to accommodate your needs and never get met, but then you're the one who's accommodating them last minute, which especially is being a spoonie, that can cost you, you know, so much in your day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like they're just not even considering what your life experience is like, nor do they seem to care on at least a level that it's being made apparent here.
Right.
And I think that, you know, this is not, I'm having a hard time believing this, you know, to Gloria, and that with their well intention. I think it sounds like that they have been given maybe so much in their life. Like they're just used to, you know, charming people, can have a way with people. And so when you're around them, sometimes it's harder to be clear about things. And I notice I have to take a step back and say, I can't meet you in person because I feel like I'm no longer able to really be clear my needs. And I have to like have space so I can be clear and then speak what I need to from a distance, because, and I wonder, and it sounds like if Gloria is that type of very charming and kind of, you know, I don't want to say maybe not intentionally outright manipulative, but like maybe there's something about the way that you're just like, how can I say no to this person?
Persuasive.
Yeah.
Influential.
Yeah. So then I think that's a great move on your behalf to not meet them, but also just to know that about yourself, that, yeah, this isn't, this person gets their way all the time. Yeah. And it's finally time for them to realize there are going to be consequences for your actions. And up to this point, maybe there haven't been many. So now they get to deal with it. And it's going to suck for them, but it's also the reality that you've not been heard for multiple years. You've been used for multiple years. I think it's time to fucking dump them and move on. And, you know, I'm sorry that this has been such a long drawn out process for you. And sad that this was not a conversation that happened earlier in the relationship, you know?
Yeah. For Gloria to use your health issues as an excuse for her not prioritizing you or treating you with respect is a classic toxic thing to do. And for you to put up with this sort of treatment, you have accepted thus far that as the price of access to her or attention from her, like the price of admission to be a part of this. And I think along the way, you've betrayed your own boundaries and therefore betrayed yourself. And I think you have to recognize that before you can start changing your own behavior to put up that wall, to stop accepting that type of treatment. Because if you break up with her, are you going to still let someone else treat you this way in the future? The next person that you find who's charming and exciting, and you find yourself making more accommodations for them, and they're just not willing to meet you halfway at all, no matter what you say. There's some work inside yourself that you can do to ensure a more likely healthy relationship in your own future when you find your next person. So I encourage you to take a look at that and bolster up the parts of you that you need to in the process, because you deserve better. You can absolutely find better. And when you do, you'll be more prepared to have the beautiful, healthy relationship that is waiting for you. So I don't think it's here, and I don't think there's any amount of conversation or atonement or changes that are going to happen that will be substantial enough to justify you staying in this relationship.
Yeah. Well said. It's I'm hearing like a need for a lot of like really strong boundaries going forward. I agree. I think that, and it sounds like with this person that maybe those you haven't exercised those boundaries very strongly, or have maybe not much at all. Yeah. If you're like accommodating them each time. So it is going to be hard and building strong boundaries. And sometimes it feels like you're rejecting the other person, but that's giving a yes to yourself.
Yes.
And it's going to be so necessary going forward. And I love how you brought that up. It's like, it's there's the stuff that she's responsible for Gloria. Mm-hmm. And, but then there's also like, how does the individual, the other person play into this dance? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think if you're continuing that disempower, you know, approaching this and giving into other people, it doesn't matter, change the name. It doesn't matter if it's Gloria or someone else. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the same situation. Mm-hmm. You know, when you meet the next person, you deserve someone who like loves you and respects you as a whole person.
Yeah.
You are not a sick person. You are a person mm-hmm. who deals with, you know, the sickness. Mm-hmm. You didn't vote opt into this.
Right.
You didn't. And I really love how you made it clear. And that's, I think that's very responsible of you and just respectful that you, you know, I think it's okay to ask for help. And I think it's also okay to say, like, I, you know, you got this, and make it clear, like, whenever you deal with certain, when you have certain things you're dealing with, to let the other person know what you are experiencing, ways they can or can't support you, and just being clear about that expectation. Because it sounds like Gloria wasn't even, you let them know, like, I'm not asking you to be responsible for me in case I need help. Mm-hmm. I've got this, or I will ask for help when I'm needing it. And that way, that if that person really hears it, they can really get your, they can respect your autonomy and you as a whole person. Because there's nothing wrong with you. You just got, you got some, unfortunately, some extra shit you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis that makes, you know, spontaneous events and late nights really hard to, you know, pull off. Because otherwise, it's like, is it worth a couple hours later at night versus 4 hours, you know, mm-hmm. or 4 days, like, just being, you know, depleted. Mm-hmm. And so, if the person, you know, going forward, if other people aren't going to accept that and just be respectful of you and where you're at, then they're not going to be your person. We deserve people who like us, all the good, the bad, all the stuff in between. And yeah, they can certainly opt in to what they're willing to do and opt out for what they're not willing to. Mm-hmm. But to put that on, that onus onto you, like you are making them responsible for something that they actually, that was never an agreement, mm-hmm. that's fucked up on their behalf. That's not okay. And that's something they need to be check themselves on.
Absolutely. Well, we wish you the best of luck, Leah, and hope that the next person you find is awesome and that you notice a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So our toolbox today is a book, and I finished reading it recently, and I'm so excited to share it with you guys. It is called The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work by John Gottman.
And if you listen to an earlier episode, can't remember which one, but
go listen to all of them to figure it out.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the description, but we did a research about from the John Gottman Institute, and so this is a book mm-hmm, by them. Mm-hmm. It's a really juicy stuff, and it does kind of build in, there is some of that research in here, and then we're expanding to a much bigger breadth of work.
Totally. So what's great about this book is that he debunks a lot of myths about the things that people assume make a healthy marriage or long-term relationship. And he breaks down and debunks the myths and replaces them with actually research-supported information and tools and tactics on how to make your marriage go more smoothly. There's a lot of stuff in here about conflict management, communication, self-awareness, physiology. I learned some really interesting stuff about blood flow in the brain and how that affects the way that we react to conflict differently than others.
Tell us, Meg.
Yeah. About the ways that men's, on average, this is not necessarily true for everyone, but the pattern is that the male physiological response to conflict is more quickly to be aroused, like triggered into fight or flight, and takes longer to calm back down to baseline, whereas for women, on average, they are slower to startle or get agitated, and they calm down self-soothing quicker. And this isn't a conscious thing. You don't choose for this to happen. This is like biological, physiological things that are happening outside your control. And so that affects very much the ways that men and women, when they have conflict with each other, will respond to the difficulties and the way things are communicated and the way people respond with defensiveness versus soothing and like peacemaking activities. And I was just so fascinated by that. And that's just like in the beginning of chapter 2. So
yeah. I could see that. That's so, I can relate to that so much. Right? So you were mentioning that some of the myths about why marriages fail and some of the myths, which I thought was really interesting, is like lack of communication, lack of conflict resolution skills, differences in personality or interests or conflict styles, are unequal contributions in affairs. I thought that was really fascinating. Like, those are things I look at, like, you know, what would make it a relationship work? And a lot of those, I'm like, those seem pretty important. Yeah.
So those are all the myths that they debunk, right? Mm-hmm. That, like, conflict resolution skills are the things that you need. And he replaces it with something that is like conflict resolution skills. But one of the arguments he makes is about, for example, active listening as a skill. It's very important. Everybody needs to work on it and learn it. But it's so hard to use in the moment of conflict. We are just so aroused and agitated and on, you know, and distracted by our own pain, the things we want, the accusations we want to make, the story we're telling them ourselves about our partner. It gets so stirred up in even the most conscientious people that it's really hard to use the, like, oh, I hear you, and, like, I feel blank when you blank, and here's what I heard you just say. Like, it'd be great if we could handle conflict that way, but I feel like in this book he acknowledges that a lot of people without extensive practice have such difficulty using those tools that they need to be kind of given something else to work with. And I loved that approach. It was very practical, very accessible, and down to earth for all kinds of people. And this isn't just for marriage. I know that's in the title, but this is for any relationship. If you want it to go smoothly, if you want to be able to deal with the conflict that inevitably arises between people.
In these seven principles, one of them I want to just kind of give some detail on, mm-hmm. is about love maps. And I thought that this one is really cool.
Yeah.
It's like, and, you know, they go on saying that, you know, you only truly love someone if you know them well. Mm. So happy couples know each other intimately. And so you, like, get to know, like, what's their greatest fears, their successes, their favorite music. And over time that changes. And, you know, over time that you want to make sure that you're still in touch with that, because mm-hmm. yeah, sometimes your interest, your style of music that you enjoy may radically change,
yeah,
or things that you once were excited about now are no longer in play because now you're into new things. So there's lots of really good exercises and quizzes and stuff that you can do with your partner, mm-hmm. and with yourself. And in, you know, regarding, like, the love maps, that, like, you can use questions in the book, and you kind of interview your spouse and can ask them all these things to kind of get deeper. Think of it almost like recreating a first date all over again.
Yeah.
And then you can quiz each other on this information. And that is super important. I think that, and then being able to explore that stuff within yourself, and then mm-hmm. seeing how that information, how does that relate to you as a couple, mm-hmm. as you as an individual, and then in your relationship. And so there's lots of, throughout the book, all these kind of exercises and things, like actionable items, so that way you can, you know, really deepen your relationship instead of it just being like, well, I already know she likes this or he likes this, mm-hmm. Or they like this. And it's, you know, then it's like we stop caring about what, you know, we assume that someone is just a static being. They're like, oh, of course they like this thing.
Yeah.
Of course they like apples with peanut butter. It's mm-hmm. like, but that can change, you know, like, especially if you think, I know I used to be a kid and I used to hate guacamole. I was like, would throw it off the table. And as Hispanic, I can't believe that was how I remember. I remember how grossed out I was with avocados and guac, and now it's like that is my daily addiction. You know,
and now you bathe in that shit.
Exactly, I might as well. And so you change so much. Sometimes even over the course of several years, I used to love super chaotic music and I love to put albums on shuffle. Hell no, anyway. It's a cardinal sin. Now it's like start to finish.
Oh my God.
And I do not put my crazy, you know, like when I had an iPod and having, like, I don't know, several thousand songs and then shuffle, it'd go from a really soft acoustic to some, like, brutal technical death metal. And then it'd be back to some, like, maybe some pop and hip hop. And then it'd go to some grindcore. So it's like all over the place. And now I'm like, I'll only change if my mood has changed. Mm-hmm. But I'm usually like, this is what I'm going to be listening to right now. And I'm like very clear.
Yeah.
And so I think it does people and humans a disservice when we stop checking in and stop getting curious about another person.
Yes, that's so true. And I think this book gives a lot of great examples and word by word dialogue of, you know, people that they've studied and have recorded their conversations. And therefore, you can learn from these people having real conflicts and what they tend to say. And there's even this chapter where he breaks down line by line, like, this was an accusation. This was a repair attempt. This was a dodging the, you know, it's just like identifying. And that's what I really want, because conversations feel like mud sometimes. It's just chaos and like mush of all these different things. And you're like, who's even doing what here? I just feel agitated and I don't know why. Like, where's my way out of this maze? And seeing the breakdown of exactly the, you know, the parts, the functioning of the conversation and why it's going the way it is was just super, super useful. And the questionnaires and assessments in the book are also great. So this is one of those where I listen on audiobook and then I'm actually going to go and buy the physical book sometimes so that I can bookmark all these assessments so that you can take them at any time. And some of them are scoring. Some of them are true or false. Some are like fill in the blank, how one should respond to this sort of situation. And then there's a key to some of them, like, oh, if you scored 0 to 5, you know, this is an area you should work on and consider it this way. If you, you know, scored 6 to 10, your relationship is healthy in this area. And I was like, this is a great tool that you can use over and over at different points in your relationship to kind of just check in and see where we're at in terms of that particular principle of the 7 principles that he describes. So highly recommend. Go dive deep. This is a very valuable thing, and I think it will reveal a lot for you.
Mm-hmm. We'll put a link in the description so you can order and support us.
Yeah. We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get 1 free audiobook and 1 free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.